This study will be shorter than usual because the passage that we're going to be considering is really a little bit too long for, or too short for one study, and the passage that we'll take up next is a little bit too long to combine the two. So we'll just go with the short one, and then we'll have another study on the on Jacob's return from Paddan Aram. So if you recall, last time we looked at Jacob arriving in Paddan Aram, the home of his mother Rebecca and their grandfather, or his grandfather Abraham, of course, because he was running away from his twin brother Esau after he deceived him out of his blessing from their father Isaac. Now, while he was in Paddan Aram, of course, Jacob married two of his uncle Laban's daughters, Leah and Rachel, and took their two maidservants, Zilpah and Bilhah, as concubines. And together, these four women had borne him 11 of his 12 children. Rachel would still have one more, or 12 sons, I should say, and one daughter, at least, Dinah. And Rachel would later have his youngest son, Benjamin, and tragically she would die in childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin. But that, we're getting ahead of ourselves again. Now, Jacob had served his uncle Laban for 7 years each for Leah and Rachel, and then he remained in Paddan Aram in Laban's service, and that's where we'll take up the story. In Genesis 30, starting in verse 25, it says, "As soon as Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, 'Send me away that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service that I have given you.' But Laban said to him, 'If I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination,'" and we'll get into that in a minute. That word nahas can mean a few things, and its translation is a little bit problematic, but once again, we'll get into that in a minute. "I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed you, blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." Now, there's a somewhat oversimplified saying in Christianese that God gives us one of three possible answers to prayer. Yes, no, and not right now. Well, if you'll recall from our study of Jacob's dream at Bethel, where he dreamed of the stairway ascending into heaven, God appeared to him from the stairway and from the top, and he said in Genesis 28:15, "Behold, I am with you, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Now, God is sovereign in all things, and he always keeps his promises. Yet the timing for Jacob's return to Canaan that God had promised wasn't quite right yet. God had other things for Jacob to do in Paddan Aram before sending him back to Canaan. Now, with regard to this Hebrew word nahas that's translated in the ESV as "I have learned by divination," I think that this, at best, translating this word is a little bit difficult. Some of the modern translations, like the ESV that I'm using, and the NIV, and the CSB, render it as "I have learned by divination." But the King James and the New King James translate it as "I have learned by experience." The problem is, to me at least, is the connotation that this word divination has, at least to the modern reader. It implies that there was some sort of occult sign that was given to Laban. But that is, I don't think, is really the case. What I think that nahas really means in this verse is that Laban had learned or discerned or divined, which is the sort of old way of saying it, that he had prospered because of Jacob. I think maybe the 1995 version of the New American Standard Bible gets closer to the mark. It says, I have divined that. But he, as I said, even that is a problem because we don't really say that anymore in English. I divine this or I divine this. Or, you know, so modern English speakers might not understand. But what he really means is, I've come to be aware, or I know that, you know, I have prospered because of you. But all that speculation aside, God clearly intended for Jacob to remain in Paddan Aram. And what's interesting or ironic is that Laban recognized that, even though Jacob did not. So continuing on now in verse 29, Jacob said to him, "You yourself know that I have served you and how your livestock has fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now when shall I provide for my own household also?" Now, we really don't know anything about Laban's economic status prior to Jacob's arrival. Of course, they'd gotten Nahor, Laban and Rebekah's father, had received quite a significant bride price from Abraham's servant, and they didn't turn it down. But, you know, surely they weren't really destitute before Jacob arrived. Maybe Jacob was just being a little bit melodramatic as he was, you know, coming to Laban looking for a pay raise. So continuing on in verse 31, it says, "He said, 'What shall I give you?'" That is Laban. "Jacob said, 'You shall not give me anything, but if you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come to look into my wages with you. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen.' Laban said, 'Good, let it be as you have said.'" Now, Jacob's idea for his, you know, wages from Laban is intriguing. Clearly, Jacob intended to take some of Laban's livestock as his own. We have to assume that the spotted and speckled sheep and goats and the black lambs were considered inferior for some reason, or Laban might not have been willing to part with them. And furthermore, their coloration would serve as a marker, kind of like a modern-day brand or ear tag to identify Jacob's stock and keep it separate from Laban's. Now, although Laban agreed to this plan, clearly he intended to cheat Jacob, as we'll see next. In verse 35, it says, "But that day Laban removed from the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in charge of his sons, and he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob pastured the rest of Laban's flock. Now, Laban was a liar and a cheat and a backstabber. We've already seen that when he pulled the old switcheroo on Jacob with Leah, when he had told Jacob that he was going to be working for him for 7 years for Rachel, and then he put Leah in his place and through that managed to get 14 years of free labor out of Jacob for his two daughters. But that all begs the question, why does God let the wicked prosper? It's an age-old question. You know, there are lots of psalms about it. You know, start out with, "How long, O Lord?" Right? Why does he allow this? Now, in this instance, we need look no further than God's plan and promise, really, to bring forth from Jacob's offspring, from the offspring of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and then Judah and on, Jesus, through whom all of the families of the earth would be blessed. That was God's plan, and he allowed Laban to sort of take advantage of Jacob because he wanted Jacob's wife Leah to have Judah, and there then after that, through Judah, Jesus. So in verse 37, it says, then Jacob took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks. He set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Jacob would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock, that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flocks, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's, and the stronger, Jacob's. Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Well, now, obviously, it was God's sovereign will, as we've just said, that caused Jacob's flocks and herds to prosper in Paddan Aram, along with his children being born there, despite Laban's initial rustling of Jacob's flock and flocks and herds and giving them to his own sons. In fact, God made Jacob prosperous in Paddan Aram despite his lack of trust and lack of faith, not because of this silly, witchcraft that Jacob had perpetrated. Notice also that God blessed Jacob despite Jacob's effort to cheat Laban by only placing the sticks in front of the stronger breeding stock. As we've seen before, both Jacob and Laban were schemers and connivers and cheaters that were always looking to get ahead at somebody else's expense. In this respect, they both richly deserve the treatment that they got from each other. But, God allowed them both to prosper despite their despicable business dealings because his plan was to bring forth Jesus from Jacob's line. Now, what really confuses me about this story, though, is the fact that God has allowed it to be included in his word. Certainly, it does very little to reveal the true nature of Jacob's stay in Paddan Aram, that is, to marry Leah, and that she would have Judah, and that in turn Judah's line would bring forth Jesus. This story about the sticks doesn't really serve to illuminate that fact, the gospel. In fact, it tends to obscure it. Now, it isn't clear from the narrative whether Laban and Jacob's wives and children were aware of what Jacob was doing with these sticks, or even if they were aware, whether they believed that the sticks had any effect or not. What's even more confounding to me, though, is that Moses, whom God used to write this whole narrative down hundreds of years later, saw fit to include it either because he believed the effect of the sticks, them, or because God directed him to include it, whether or not he believed in it. But why God allowed that or directed it, I'm not understanding. So, next time we'll look at Jacob finally returning from Paddan Aram to Canaan, after God commanded him to do so, when the timing was right. And we'll look at the sort of acrimonious or parting that Jacob had with Laban,